The GA Hour is sponsored by Paddy Power. Money back as a free bet on any championship match on live TV. If you're losing, first goal scorer bet gets a goal.
And when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop. And when I got the chance of goal, I said I should go on. So it opened up.
We're only the small little fish out there, so we are. And we're trying hard to make it through. But it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know. And it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because, like, I'm heartbroken.
So it's just me and you here, Brian, today. We've been let down by a few other pundits. So unfortunately, for an All-Ireland quarter-final, it's just you are the only expert here, and then it's me. So I'm going to have to try and pretend to be an expert today as well, which is going to be a complete disaster.
Loose use of the word expert now as well, Molly. Thanks very much.
So both beaten provincial finalists got back in the mix. Kilkenny shocked us all by beating Cork, which was a really good display by them in the second half. And Laois, Tipperary obviously beat Laois, which nobody would be surprised about. But some people might be a little bit surprised that Laois got within 10 points of them. So, like, I mean, maybe that's where we'll start with Laois putting in a very good performance. I didn't think they'd stay within 10 of Tipperary. I don't know about you.
I did. I thought in around 8 to 10 points, I thought would have been the defeat. I thought, like, obviously, Laois had massive momentum coming into this game. They were going to set up and be difficult playing an extra defender back there. And I suppose the most impressive thing over the Dublin game was their use of the ball. And they continued to do that yesterday. Even when they were 10 points down yesterday, they continued with their short puck outs and working the ball up through the lines and drew fouls and kept themselves in the game. Obviously not really challenging enough to actually warrant that they were going to win the game, but yeah. I think that, and you've heard Eddie talk about this, they stayed with the process. You know, I know we don't like to get too caught up in technical terms and jargon and all that, but they did. Like, and you have to give them credit for that. And under extreme pressure, and as I keep saying, their use of that ball was top class.
Yeah, we like, I mean, I was very disappointed last night because I watched it this morning, and oh, you don't like to be too critical of the Sunday game, but they just did a report on an All-Ireland quarter final, which I thought was incredible and I thought it was disrespectful to Laois. After getting there, they should have been given the same billing as Kilkenny and Cork. Like, I mean, there was no sense of the great start Laois made, you know what I mean? Scoring 4 points in the opening 8 minutes. They got the score at half-time wrong in the report, said they were five down when they were four. And, like, I mean, just for to be in an All-Ireland quarter-final, be the second game in Croke Park, and to only get 2 minutes on the highlight show that night, I think, you know, I don't think that's good enough. I don't know why they did it, and it was just bad form, because, like, I mean, Laois could have been dead and buried in the game, Brian. Like, I mean, 2 goals in 4 minutes for Tipperary, and they fought back to put 4 in it at halftime, that Ross King goal. Like, I mean, I think when you throw in, they did a lap of honour, the whole crowd was behind Laois. I actually think Laois's performance, funnily enough, was almost the story of the day, outside of Patrick Horgan. It was maybe the second story of the day.
No, look, I have to start with your first point. I do think it was a disgrace as well. It's extremely bad taste. I don't know what warranted the report style that they produced last night, because they had done the full match themselves, and they had full commentary. So it's just hugely disrespectful to Laois when they're not obviously seen as one of the elite teams. I can't, you're just scratching your head at it. And as you said, factor in the Laois crowd yesterday, because every so often you could hear the Laois crowd come, you know, with their chant Laois, 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 but only for them, because, like, it was just like the Tip fans didn't really travel, and, you know, it was going to be a dead rubber game, like we often see with the football games up in Croke Park, where there's very little atmosphere. So, you know, in fairness to the Laois crowd and the performance, to marry those two things together, I thought it was hugely disrespectful. And as you said, on top of all that, it's an All-Ireland quarter final. Where in the would you ever see that with any other county?
Yeah,
and it can't be. But it's a reflection, really, on their attitude towards Laois hurling. I think.
Yeah, their attitude towards any hurling outside of the glamour counties, by the looks of things, to me. And some people are saying to me on Twitter, I was giving out about this. Oh well, the full game was shown on TV, but sure, that argument makes no sense. Sure, so was Kilkenny Cork, and that wasn't done a report on that. And the problem with the Laois game, it clashed with Kerry Mayo. So there's an awful lot of GAA fans that might have had an interest in that Laois Tipperary story, but there would be more football people. Like, I mean, of course people would have wanted to watch the extended highlights of that game. You know, it was clashing between Kerry Mayo with Kerry Mayo, which was arguably the biggest game of the whole day in either code. You won't agree with that.
No, in fairness, no, you have to agree. You have to give it. No, it was obviously Kerry Mayo was savage. But like, as you said, people were entitled to see. And look, the head scratcher for me is that I actually had done commentary on it. So there was no need for that style of report. It's only drawn criticism yourself. There's no need for it, especially like people are more vocal now than ever between pundits with their columns or Twitter, obviously, is a huge medium for that. So, you know, RTE and the Sunday Game in particular has taken a lot of slack over the last while. So I just don't understand why they would draw that criticism on themselves.
Yeah, I don't either. So the Aaron Dunphy red card kind of pretty much put this game to bed. He was playing really, really well. I think Leash were only four down at that stage, maybe four or five. And, you know, for the best forward on that day to go off, it was a huge hammer blow. 14 met against a team like Tip. That was Leash's chance gone. I think it was a terribly harsh red. I think it was a playful Tip, get off me, you know, don't be grabbing me. I think Paddy Maher, really, when he looks at himself in the mirror, will say he did himself no favours. This is a monster of a man, a warrior of a fella. He's put Joe Canning to the ground with a shoulder. For him to go down like that, like, I mean, that was, I thought that was terrible to see. And he almost fell down like he'd gotten it in the balls. Do you know what I mean? Because I don't think, Eddie Brennan says the referee didn't see it. So Paddy made it look so much worse than it was.
Yeah, I have to agree with you. And if I was Paddy Maher waking up this morning, I'd be extremely disappointed in myself. I don't know if he is or not, but it really annoys me. You know, you contrast that with Richie Hogan's belt that he took off Vancouver, and Richie just jumped back up onto his seat. Like, for Paddy, as you said, he's a warrior. He's a big physical guy. He prides himself on his physicality. Like, his biceps are bulging out through the jersey. He was the aggressor for starters in this, so he was being the bully, you know, forcing himself into to Aaron Dunphy and then to lie down with a bit of a slap. Now, he might have caught him a bit in the knee, and look, people want to go a letter to law and they'll say that, oh, it's striking and all this rubbish. Like, come on now, folks. Like, it'll just end up with the game of tiddlywinks at that case. Like, I just think that was a disgraceful decision. And, it did not reflect well on Paddy Maher in particular. It looked like it was the linesman, Johnny Murphy, that made the call, more so than Colm Lyons. Now, I didn't. Colm Lyons came in for a lot of flack about his performance, and I think rightly so. I think he was very whistle happy, but it did look like Johnny Murphy was the man making a name for himself with this sending off. I think Paddy shouldn't have reacted the way he did, and he should have jumped up a lot quicker than the way he did and lay down. Because, you know, what annoys me, as I say, and I already said this, I hate when people are, you know, digging you, being bullying and aggressive, and then when they get slapped, they lie down.
Yeah, that's why they're doing it.
That's why they're doing it. Yeah, but I hate it, though. I don't count that as manly at all.
But there is another, I suppose, like, I mean, without being too pro-leash, like, Aaron Dunphy's probably learned a good lesson in this, in that kind of provocation goes on at the top level, and flicking back your hurl, while I thought it was in a harmless kind of manner, you're putting yourself in that red card category then. So Aaron's not completely, like, you know, he shouldn't do it, and he shouldn't allow somebody trying to get under his skin. You know, he shouldn't react like that, even though we do see top level players reacting like that as well.
Yeah, of course we did. Sure, like, we'd something similar enough, and we debated on this show with Seamus Harnady on James Barry in the league in Páirc Uí Chaoimh.
That was a lot worse.
So, you know, it was worse because of where he caught him. He did seem to catch him in the private, so that seemed to be a lot worse. So, but you know, it's still the essence of flicking back after you know. Yeah. You know, someone probably being uptight with you or whatever. So, you know, you're right. Look, and I've done it myself, obviously, and got caught too. You know, you need to learn from it, as you said, Aaron Dunphy. It's a harsh lesson, but I still don't think it was a red card, you know.
Yeah, me neither. Eddie Brennan was pretty livid about it. He said, for me, and I made no qualms about it, I think there was a level of guesswork involved. I've seen it inside, and yes, there was a coming together, a whip back of the hurl. I think we see that all the time, though, which is pretty much what we're saying here, you know. Like, I mean, you just be very, very, you feel hard done by in a big game in Croke Park. I think Michael Breen got a late red as well. He got, that was for two yellows. Personally, I don't think there was much wrong with what he did for his second yellow. Like, I mean, I'm sure the Tipperary players were told, that was Paddy Purcell, when he's going on one of his slaloming runs, make sure you meet him with a shoulder. And like, Breen definitely rattled him. Paddy Purcell jumped back up. Like, I mean, I didn't think there was much in that either, even for a yellow.
Yeah, but you see them given more times than not, because the ball was gone, you know. So, but I appreciate what you're saying too. He just stood his ground, and personally more ran into him than Breen burying him, you know.
That's how it seemed. But
you do see them given, particularly the way the game is refereed now. So I wasn't surprised to see that being yellow.
Right. Okay. What did you make of the Lee slap of honour at the end?
Mixed emotions. in that, look, I don't mean that way. I mean, like, you get it that, like, the Leash crowd that were there were fantastic that day. It was as much the players, I think, going around being appreciative of their fans, and obviously the fans can't get onto the ground like they were able to in a Moor Park and show their appreciation in a one-to-one situation with the players. So I kind of get it from that perspective. At first, my initial reaction was like, oh, look, you know, that's maybe a little bit much. But in hindsight, no, I do get it. And I think it was, as I said, it's more about trying to give a bit of recognition back to the fans and see that connection. It's good because all in all, even though they were beaten by 10 points yesterday, I think they've been the story of the summer, and it's, been quite good for Leash Hurling. But there's one point I want to make and going away from that. And I just think the lead up to this game, I think it's been hugely disrespectful to Leash in that trying to make out that this victory over Dublin was on, like, almost up there with Offaly stopping Kerry in 82 or Antrim beating Offaly in 89. Like, it wasn't a win on that level at all. Like, Leash Hurling's way above that. That it seemed to be such a shock that they, God forbid, could beat Dublin.
Yeah, but they almost went to the Christy Ring last year. I think it's in that context. You know, Leash Hurling hasn't been going well.
Yeah, but I understand it didn't go well in that particular year. But, like, anyone that's close to Leash Hurling knows that it is better than that. And, like, look, Cheddar obviously is a man that's there to coalface, and he brought respectability, massive respectability, back towards Leash Hurling.
Yeah.
When they were in the I think they were in the doldrums then. I think they had just a particularly bad year last year. But they've lots of hurlers, and they've had decent underage success as well. So I just think it's been hugely disrespectful. And on top of that, I don't think Dublin, you know, they weren't one of the top three or four teams in the country. You know, like, they obviously had a really good Leinster campaign, but their big performances were in Parnell Park. And I just think, like, it was their arrogance that undone them in the end going down to Port Leash. So I just think it was a little bit disrespectful towards Leash the way they built that up.
Yeah, maybe. I think the lap of honour was a nice thing yesterday, but I wouldn't like to see that next year. I think Leash need to build on that. And where,
yeah, I agree. From
where they came from this year, I think that was a nice thing. But I do think Eddie will get them back in and go, let's set our sights a little bit higher next year now and not have Tipperary clapping us after beating us. Do you know, like, there's an element of it I didn't like, but there's a lot more about it I did like, you know, that kind of way.
Yeah,
so.
that's exactly the way I was.
So just to finish up on Leash, Brian, because we talked after the Joe McDonagh Cup final, and you thought the standard of those teams were way off the top teams. I'm not pulling you up on that or anything, but I'm just wondering how far Leash are off it now. Because, like, I mean, you look at the players not involved, Kieran Collier, Joe Campion, Lee Bergen, Sean Downey, Catter Healy. Like, that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And I talked with Cheddar about this, and Cheddar thinks all 5 would be on the starting team. Like, I mean, can Leash build on this and, you know, be a match for some of these players? They play a lovely brand of hurling. They don't give the ball away too cheaply, and they seem to have a good management team. Like, could they come up and, like, be more competitive than Offaly and Carlo were in the last couple of years?
They can. They certainly can. But again, look, if you just look at the fixtures in the cold light today, I still think they'll struggle to win a game next year. Like, if assuming the fixtures will be the flip of this year, you know, they're going to have to travel to Parnell Park. You know, that'll be their big one. And they're going to have to... they've only Galway at home and they've Wexford at home. So they're going to have to travel to Nolan Park and to the Parnell Park. So it's just very hard to see how they can actually get a win next year as well. And I don't want to be taken from them. I just think it's stacked against them. It's very, very difficult. It's a huge ask. Now, of course, I think they'll be massively competitive. I think Carlo were massively competitive this year. And obviously it's opened up this whole debate of whether there should be six teams in Leinster.
Yeah, it looks like there will be now.
You see, yeah, and it, And in my opinion, yeah, there should be. You know, I probably don't like the fact that I've been saying this for 2 years now, and it's nothing got to do with Offaly hurling. I just feel the top teams, and particularly Munster, they've just climbed the ladder and pulling it up after them. They don't really care what happens counties outside of the elite counties. So that annoys me, and it's no good for hurling in these counties. You know, Laois, Westmead, Carlow, Offaly, Kerry, all these, they're very proud. Antrim, obviously, as well, thrown in there. Very proud hurling counties. And I just, while the John McDonagh has its merits, there's probably six teams, I think, there on. I know Laois were excellent this year, but there's six teams, more or less, could beat anyone in any given day.
You know? Yeah, exactly. Right, I was tweeting yesterday after Kilkenny beat Cork, and I said, you just can't beat the magic of the Leinster Hurling Championship. Like, I mean, we get criticised on the show here, I have to tell you, of being a bit too Leinster biased. So we had to bring Brendan Bugler up last Thursday, maybe to balance out a bit. It's just all the pundits in Leinster are obviously near Dublin, and it's easier for them to come in. It's not a matter of bias, and it's said tongue-in-cheek as well. But, like, I mean, there's probably the argument that a Munster Hurling Championship is better supported, it's more glamorous, it's higher scoring, potentially, but that doesn't mean it's better than the Leinster Championship. Is that fair?
I think it's fair. Definitely this year, anyway. I think maybe for a couple of years, maybe Wexford, Dublin, Offaly weren't at the pitch of where they need to be. Kilkenny were hugely dominant. Galway were playing second fiddle for a while. Now, obviously, Galway are one of the stronger counties. Well, they have an asterisk, I suppose, attached to them when it comes to Leinster hurling.
Yeah.
But, you know, the traditionals, I think Dublin, obviously, and Wexford have picked it up significantly. I think Carlow and Laois have risen over the last couple of years. That's fantastic to see. I don't think they deserve to be left out on the outside because of that. Because ultimately, these are decisions made in Central Council, essentially, you know, they're being made by delegates, and it's elitism. We keep saying this, and I personally think we see the same in the Super 8s. You know, it's all about making sure the top teams are playing regularly for TV and for maximum exposure, you know, gates, receipts and all those sort of things, but it's not for the greater good. You know, you're right, it's tongue-in-cheek for sure. How many years have we been listening about how great Munster hurling is? So when we get an opportunity, of course we're going to crow about Leinster hurling. So I make no apologies about that to anybody.
Yeah, and in fairness, well, we were all tipping Cork here last week, so it was just the brilliance of Kilkenny. And we'll talk about this in part two, just never being beaten and just bloody, you know, having that will to win that no other county has like them. It's incredible. Two beautiful pieces of skill yesterday. Sublime was the Noel McGrath pass for Callanan, and the control from Callanan was just as sublime, and the finish from Callanan was just as sublime. So while Noel McGrath kind of gets the headlines for the unbelievable pass, it almost overshadows what Callanan did from there on.
Yeah, you've hit the nail on the head. Like, McGrath's vision, we rave about that all the time, but we really saw it yesterday. To strike that pass, you know, 60 metres, like a laser. But as you said, like, Callanan's touch to do that. Like, look, every hurler has that in their locker. Don't get me wrong. You know, if you're playing in the county hurling, of course you have it. But to be able to do it in Croke Park, you know, in an Aran quarter final, like, and don't for 1 second be disrespectful and say only against Laois. It doesn't matter. That was savage. Yeah. Just to be able to take that on the run, control it, you know, push into your man, pull back out again, which you see all good forwards doing, and rifle into the bottom corner. Like, that was just fantastic finish. Like, he is 6 goals now in 6 games, a goal a game. Like, this is phenomenal. Like, you know, Shamie Callan, people were saying last year he was finished. Sheedy came in, made him captain. People were saying, what is he doing? Oh, he's going back for one of the old guards. Shamie's nearly finished. Oh my God, is he repaid Sheedy in fairness to him? Like, he has to be up there. If Tipperary go on to get to an All-Ireland final, he has to be in the running for hurler of the year.
Yeah, no, definitely. And Patrick Horgan's catch and goal probably overshadowed it, because you can talk to me about this catch, because for me, having caught a few tennis balls in my day, not so many slitters, it's almost physically impossible to catch it coming over someone's shoulder because your hand is pointing down, right? So how did he do it?
Yeah, he just got it at the right time. It was brilliant because Hugh Lawler, obviously, he loves to tack high balls. He obviously prides himself in that, and he usually gets up off the ground and makes it impossible then for the man he's marking to actually get anywhere near him because he's so tall on top of, he's leaping up off the ground. But in that particular instance, he was obviously static and he was standing and he was kind of backpedaling a little bit. But Horgan just like picking his, almost picking something out of his ear, like, yeah, picking a pocket. Like, pocket, it was just unbelievable, like, to be able to catch it like that. And then to show that composure with two and three around him. And he showed a brilliant thing. And I remember being taught this at a young age from a coach here in my own club. It's not about always lifting the net out of it. You know, just pick your place and place it into it. And again, we had this debate about Shane McCallan a couple of weeks ago with Nicky Quaid. You know, if you pick your place properly, you don't have to letter the ball. And like, there was not Noel Murphy could do about it in that situation.
Yeah, there was almost a feel of the Ozzie Gleeson one when he went on the great run. You know, that kind of a little tapped in finish that's going kind of past him. It was great to see Richie Hogan back, wasn't it? Like, I mean, any hurling supporters would love to have seen him. He scored 1-2. The pure Richie Hogan, he was absolutely livid coming off after 50 minutes. Like, I mean, it's a classic. Now, he had scored 1-2. Now, in fairness to Brian Cody, he's minding him. I'm sure he'd say, Richie, I'm only minding you. You're only back. Ah, for God's sake, Brian. Like I say, he's just kind of given out.
Richie.
Yeah, don't take me off when I'm playing well. Now, the substitution actually, it worked out well because the lads came on inside, were full of running. But I know you've just already mentioned it. Like, I mean, the hit he took from Bill Cooper, like, if Richie Hogan wanted to, he could have got Bill Cooper almost sent off for that, because there was, you know, the kind of a head-high tackle, there's an element of danger to that. And a couple of rolls around the ground and Bill Cooper, that's not in Richie Hogan. He got straight up. He reckons he obviously wasn't hurt enough to stay down, got straight up. We don't see that enough anymore in hurling or football. And I thought the funny thing about it was Bill Cooper stayed down injured. You know those kind of ones, Brian?
Yeah, it looked like Bill Cooper was nearly trying to avoid the car.
Well, that's it. We've all done it. So you do something dirty or dangerous and you're waiting on a yellow and you stay down and you might say to the physio, is he still around there? Is the referee lurking around? We all knew what Bill Cooper was doing there yesterday.
Yeah, but no, look, for the Richie thing, I think this is why any neutral out there loves Kilkenny, right? And I've no problem in saying that, even though I'm a staunch Offaly man, I do. I love their honesty, their humility, their aggressiveness, and just their manliness, essentially. Because, you know, we have to say that. It was, for me, it was reminiscent of when Tommy Walsh took the slap in the 2009 All-Ireland. Benny Dunn was only after coming on as a sub and he pulled head high straight across Tommy's head. Tommy went down initially, obviously, with almost a fright of the belt, but jumped up straight away, you know, and just, that's not the way to do business in Kilkenny. And obviously that comes from Cody and it comes from in-house matches that they play. You just get on with it. And I love that. And I think anyone, as I said, any neutral out there, you can't but applaud that and have respect for that. So I think that's been ingrained in Richie for a long, long time. That just doesn't happen overnight. So I think that's, you know, a mark of respect to the way Kilkenny go about their business.
Yeah, definitely. Like,
so, look, fair play to them.
Yeah, and you compare, you obviously contrast that Hogan reaction to Paddy Maher reaction, which, you know, was just chalk and cheese. There's no two ways about
it. He's not like Paddy, though, either. And that's probably the most disappointing part of it, because, as we said, he's such a warrior and he takes such massive belts and gives them out. And it's just disappointing to see it, being honest.
Yeah, know? No, definitely. Just before we finish up and go into part two, Brian, there was two black card fouls in the Kilkenny game. Like, Cork are trying to get back into the game. Like, the Cork obviously went to sleep. We'll talk about this in part two. And then they hit 1-3 without reply to get right back in the game. There was two or three in it. And they were having attacks and they were running at goal. And there was one from Paddy Deegan and then an even worse one from Joey Holden. Now, I know we've talked about this before, but this is going to have to be legislated for in hurling, that you can't be getting just taking a yellow card for completely messing up a breakaway potential goal scoring opportunity.
Yeah, I think they're going to have to look at something different, because, look, hurling people are dead against the black card for starters. Like, you know, we don't want to see players being taken off. And I know you can argue the merits of this and they're pulling down, but there has to be some sort of sanction at the same time, and I agree with you. Like, you see, maybe we can learn something from other games. You see in Aussie rules, if the 50-metre mark, you know, or rule, where if someone causes some infringement like that, it's just automatically moved 50 metres.
Yeah.
You know, do we say if it's inside the 45 and the referee deems he's stopping a goal-scoring opportunity, you know, is it automatically a penalty or something like that, and your yellow card? Something like that that's just going to eradicate that from the game whatsoever. It might sound ridiculous, but it won't be long about changing the way teams go about their business. You know, if that's the rules when they come in, it will eradicate it from your game very quickly.
Yeah, now, I remember us talking about this specific thing a couple of times. Like, this is how often this is happening. You know, this is a start of the show talking point on a few different occasions this year. So, like, I mean, I do think at the end of this year, maybe it's something they're going to look at. Because
I think they need to look at it. But I think, look, as I said, I think hurling people are straight away were against the black card. So I don't think that will fly.
Yeah.
We don't want that. We don't want that creeping into our game. I just think if you have a measure like that, it's a penalty that I just don't think you'll see it in the game anymore. You know, because you're still seeing black cards, you know, essentially. That's why we're always still debating them, you know. So I think only in desperate situations will we see those type of pull downs. Those real deliberate pull downs.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Okay. Right. Great stuff. We'll come back and we'll talk about the Kilkenny Cork game.
I'd never be allowed to go off and eat a heap of shite like him and go off a slob or whatever. Like, I was always doing a bit.
All I remember is I thought I was going to get clobbered on the way in there. I threw the ball up in the air. I don't know, it was pure luck now, in fairness. Pure luck. But fucking bullshit, have you seen yourselves?
Okay, so Kilkenny 2-27, Cork 3-18, Brian. And how do you describe a team that played so well in the first half, Cork, and should have been more up at half-time, missed some goal chances and played most of the good hurling and put an in lovely ball into a two-man full forward line who were running amok? How can they go into the dressing room half-time and lose their mojo to the extent that the game was practically over 15 minutes after half-time?
Yeah, it's unbelievable. And obviously, the huge criticism of Cork now is that they're soft again. You know, it's coming back to. But is that completely wrong? Oh, I don't think so either. Because what did Kilkenny do? They brought it into a battle. They increased their physicality. They started to win their one-on-one situations. You know, Cody, I can only assume, you know, ran the hairdryer treatment on his half hour line in particular, start winning, you know, their puck outs. They don't. I know they hit the odd short puck out, but, you know, if they go route one and Walter Walsh and TJ Reid, you know, it's up to them to win it at the same time. And they just start to win those one-on-one battles all over the field. And look, you keep saying, if you listen to Brian Cody and if you read his comments this morning, he says the same thing over and over again. And I don't think he's trying to fool anyone. He talks about the complete honesty of his players. He talks about his players taking responsibility on the field, playing what's in front of them. He doesn't look for the credit. As he said, in Croke Park, you can't get a huge amount of messages out onto the field. So players have to hurl what's in front of them. And he has huge trust in his players. And if you do take the starting 15 for Kilkenny, you know that you're there on merit because you've gone through the trenches, essentially. So there's that ultimate trust, and that's built up over time, I think, essentially. And, you know, we talk about this manliness, the way they played or hurling and all that. You know, so it's been built up over years, and it's an eternal cycle. Obviously, Cody's been there now for 20-odd years. So the things, his key messages have never changed. And I suppose that aspect of hurling, for all the tactics in the world, you know, that doesn't change either. And even we saw that with Patrick Horgan's interview last week. Prior to the match, he was talking about, you know, all the video analysis in the world, but when you go out in Croke Park, it's you against your man, and no video is going to help you then. So, you know, it is amazing, you know, that primeval, that, you know, essential, that man-on-man battle in hurling is still so important.
Yeah, no, I read those comments from Cody and I thought they were interesting. He says in Croke Park, it's not communication from the sideline or anything like that. It's players taking on responsibility and doing whatever it takes as they see things unfolding. Their willingness to keep going and keep going, they were the things that essentially swayed it for us today. So, like, I mean, Conor Fogarty is, a lot of people picking out the tactic of Conor Fogarty maybe dropping a little bit off his man and covering space. And, like, I mean, he was marking Lehan and Daniel Carney. It probably wasn't the smartest thing to do to be dropping off those two players. But, like, is Conor Fogarty, do you think, just doing this as he sees the lads inside running amok and going, geez, I must drop back here, there's pressure? Because, like, I do take the point that players on the field, the leaders, can spot these problems way before a manager, oftentimes. Do you think there's an element of players just being smart analysts themselves on the field?
Definitely, and I know that from my own perspective. It's way easier when you're on the field to see these switches,
yeah,
you know, and then see where you need you know, cut out space, because you're in the middle of it, you're in the thick of it, and it can be hard, because I've obviously at times been up on the sideline and it's not as obvious, and it can be hard to get messages across exactly what you want as well. But I think Kilkenny did yesterday, and I have to give them credit, I think they went back to being Kilkenny, you know, enforcing their will on the way that they played. After the initial burst from Cork, they decided, you know, the hallmark of Kilkenny is a strong defence, putting up a wall across that half-back line, essentially 4 and 5 players there at all times, half forwards dropping deep, huge work rate all over the field. You know, they are mixing it up a little bit better. You know, they're still not, they're obviously not a slick, short passing team, but they are able to mix it up that little bit better than what they used to be. But they're going back to what makes them Kilkenny. I think the one criticism I have against them in that Leinster final is that they were so unlike Kilkenny. They were so concerned with Wexford, and they exposed themselves massively at the back at times. Now, I know Wexford forced that on them, and they have to give Wexford credit for that as well. But obviously, they'd lost what it was like to beat Kilkenny, and we saw that going down the home stretch, essentially. That was our big criticism of Kilkenny.
Yeah.
So I think you have to give them credit. They went back to what they know best, and as you said, maybe guys were being vocal on the field, half-backling, calling back Conor Fogarty and so on and so forth. So that works. You know, you've been involved in teams like that where the players take ownership on the day and start, yeah, you know, making the calls, and you know, you go here and you trust each other, essentially, you know?
Yeah, no, like, I mean, I do think that there's no better analyst. I think managers should use players a lot more than they do, because definitely, if you're left half back, there's no better person to analyse the breaks in midfield or what midfielders are doing than you, because you're standing there staring at them as the kick out comes. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Like you were very slow in the GAA for that, because yeah, you look at other sports, like, you know, the Cricket World Cup yesterday, you know, the captain, more, which in our essence is almost the manager, you know, he's in the middle, the thick of it, like, you know. Yeah. And the same you see in the rugby, that the rugby captain is part of the selection team and makes the calls on the day of the match and all those sort of things. So, you know, we're very slow to change that aspect or that dynamic in the GAA, I think. But I think it's probably only a matter of time. Probably some of the top teams are implying that.
Oh, I think they are. No, they definitely are. I know Jim Gavin absolutely takes feedback from players on stuff like that. You'd be mad not to. Like, I mean,
you're mad not to, yeah.
You know, they could have one of the future best analysts in the game standing on the field in the thick of it, and you're deciding you know better. Like, I mean, you need to have a bit more humility and ask them. But anyway, I do think the Kilkenny players put fires out themselves. I definitely agree with that. But like, I mean, who was it? Oh yeah, sure, the puckouts were a big thing. It almost shows how Cork's performance is so directly linked to Nash's puckouts, because when they were going well in the first half, they were flying it. And then they completely malfunctioned in the second half, where Anthony Nash, which I couldn't believe, resorted to booming the ball as far down he could down the field. And sure, that's bread and butter for Kilkenny.
Yeah, especially because Cork don't have a ball winner.
Only Harnedy.
And still, look, you can't put everything down on top of him, you know. No. So and we don't know, was there something wrong with Aidan Walsh or not, because obviously
he's injured.
So, because look, that puts that one to bed. But you know, Cork, you know, only 3 of their forwards scored. The whole half forward line was taken off. Bill Cooper didn't score, obviously he went off injured as well. So look, they just didn't score enough, essentially, either. But as you said, it's their ability to win their own ball, or the dirty ball, that is one of their massive problems, and it hasn't changed. You know, I think now they've lost 6 consecutive matches in Croke Park as well. You know, so that they're all essentially knockout games when they get there. So they're on a bad roll there, and this is, we talk about being un-Kilkenny like, this is very much un-Cork like, and this softness has crept back into their game again. They definitely need to mix it up. They're fantastic hurlers, brilliant, skillful hurlers, but we're just probably not seeing enough of a mix, because that's essentially what you need. Going back to the poke out strategies, as you said, I've always been somewhat critical of it, because it is totally dependent on open space and huge movement by the half forward line and midfield, and that's all great, and it's all great, particularly, as you said, and I don't mean this as a slight against Munster Championship, but earlier in the year, when those because gaps are there more often than not. Whereas when you get down to business in the championship, you know, those bases are not available anymore. So you have to be able to mix and match your puck-out strategy. You have to be able to go long and be able to go at these runners.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. And we see it in football a lot now. So you have a puck-out strategy. It's all about movement. And it's all about the players up the field following your decoy runners into areas so that you're going to put it into an area where, you know, demand that it's for. But in Gaelic football now, they're all going zonal. So we saw the example last night on the Sunday game. I think it was one that was directed at Harnedy, and Harnedy went running out for it, and the two Kilkenny defenders just shifted them off one to the other. They actually didn't run with Harnedy. So say if you're in the half back line for Kilkenny, like, the best thing to do against Cork is to not actually move at all. And the Cork half forward line can move over and back, and they'll end up just running from one over to another, and they're going to run towards you rather than you chasing around after them. And when you're chasing around after them, you're going where they want you to go. Whereas if you hold your position, the ball is going to land in either right half-back, left half-back or centre half-back position. So if you don't move, you've probably a stronger chance than if you're chasing these lads around all over the place.
Definitely. And Kilkenny in particular were masters of that down through the years. And it comes back to good communication on that half-back line. You know, they probably have to go with them about 5-10 meters until they know for definite they're switching.
Yeah, then pawn them off.
And then pawn them off, and then, you know, you take responsibility for this new man. But the only possible way you can be the defender in that situation is on the outside then, you know, to the sideline stage. But you're probably after running, you could be after running from 10, trying to get the whole way across to 12 or 11 over to 12. You've huge yardage to run in that situation. And also with a ball like that, you know, maybe a midfielder or a half forward's dropping back as well into that space. So even if you do win it, you know, you could be after running 40 or 50 metres, you're going full tilt and you're being pushed and hushed out, you know, away from goal. So even if you did win it, you know, you can be running down a blind alley essentially. So you're dead right, that communication on that half back line, let them off sometimes. Once that communication's there, but if it's not there, it's an awful mess. I've seen both sides of it as well.
Yeah, no, it definitely was. Just on those puckouts again, because when he resorted to the booming ones, because he went short to a couple of times, Sean O'Donoghue, Niall O'Leary, Christopher Joyce, Mark Ellis, Steve McDonald. And you know the thing of when Cork goes short, maybe to a defender, they come out running solo on the ball and they try to create the overlap and hand pass over the head. Kilkenny were so ravenous for turnovers, like, it's probably a risky game against them.
Yeah, and it didn't look hugely comfortable. Like, Sean O'Donoghue and O'Leary in particular didn't look comfortable. Even Mark Ellis at times, you know, they look shaky. You know, they weren't probably, you know, using that ball intelligent enough. And as you said, that Kilkenny, you know, Richie Hogan got in a couple of blocks early on. He kind of set the tone. Then when the subs came on, you know, their work rate was fantastic. And not only was their work rate fantastic, and this is another key point we need to make, their subs scored 6 points in play.
Yeah.
You know, Cork, none of their subs scored. Tipperary only got 1 point from their subs. And I don't think Lanny Leash sub scored either. So it just shows on the day for all four teams, the impact of that Kilkenny bench, essentially.
Yeah, no, it was. Walter Walsh was outstanding when he came on. He got 3 from play. And Damian Cahillane ended up coming on to mark him after 54 minutes. But that was 20 minutes, maybe a little bit too late.
Yeah, true, yeah. And Cahillane's big and he's raw. But, like, there's obviously something amiss there as well, you know, that you know, he's not seen as a first-choice defender at the moment. So that, yeah, he's one person that could probably bring that physicality. I know Owen Cadigan obviously brings it, and he's a wily old fox in there at full back, but you'll be thinking that there'd be room for two of them.
He played well, Cadigan, but I thought his defending for the Fennelly goal was very poor. Like, his goal side of him, he needs to be stronger there. Fennelly turned him very easily and then was able to bat it in the goals. But when Fennelly got his ball, hand on the ball, you're thinking Cadigan's in a really strong position, facing him. You know, his leg's square. Fennelly's not going to be a speed demon from a standing position. He's touch tight. He just rounded him so easily.
Yeah, but Fennelly, in fairness to him, is a bear. He's so strong. But I agree with you. You would be disappointed. If you were Owen Cadigan, he'd be disappointed for himself. You'd expect that you'd stand him up. There's no way he should get a strike off. But look, that little bat down, it's a great trick to have in your locker. You know, if you were trying to swing the hurl in that situation, which, you know, like that actual shot wasn't in the game 15 years ago, you know, maybe even 20 years ago, definitely. It wasn't in the game, you know. You would have seen, 20 years ago, you'd have seen people refer to a drop puck in that situation.
Right.
You know, and the drop puck has gone out of the game completely. You know, and in fairness, it was Cork actually brought that into the game, and Donal O'Grady probably in particular.
Can you not hook a drop? Can you not hook a drop puck?
Drop puck is just, you never know where the ball's going to go. That's the, right. The one thing with a drop puck. It depends on the surface then as well.
Well, you could still be hooked doing that though, no? Because that's the,
you can be hooked, yeah, you can be hooked. But right. Like obviously a drop hook in that, you see the reason you do a drop hook in that situation years ago would have been that it's just way harder to block down.
Right.
So it's hard to get a hurl or a leg across the ball. Like, you know, any defender will tell you that. We had JJ here be able to agree with you. You know, Brian Corcoran scored a famous one years ago. You know, a drop hook into the bottom corner and kick any goal one day. So it was a kind of a shot that was years ago utilised an awful lot more. But as I said, that the batting, it was definitely, it's a fantastic way to finish. And we see players do it an awful lot more, and it's hugely effective. It's very hard to block down a batted shot.
Oh no, it's impossible because the hurley's in front of you. You can't actually be hooked unless they stick it in between the hurl and your face, probably coming in at the side. Colin Fennelly, since we're on the subject of him, like he scored 1-1. And he had a hand in 1-1 for Richie Hogan, which he dropped one down off the hurl and then batted another one down with his hand, which I hadn't seen before.
No, that was brilliant. Yeah, it was great. Great thinking just at that split second, knowing that he's, you know, he couldn't get his hurl up. He was wrestling essentially with Owen Cadigan. But what he is brilliant at, and this is probably why he's such a handful, he's such a big unit of a man, he's big square man, big shoulders, he's put on huge muscle obviously over the years. He can thank the army for that one. He doesn't thank them for a lot, but I think all his time in the army allowed him to build himself up into that. But he's brilliant at holding the full back behind him. The full back can never get out in front of him, whether the ball comes in low or high. Whatever way he's able to do it, he's able to hold them off and make life almost impossible. You very, very rarely see a ball being cut off him. And he eventually, or essentially, always breaks the ball down in front of him. So, you know, a good forward sniping around like Richie Hogan knows, no matter what there, whatever way he's going to get you, he's going to break the ball down in front of you. So that's a key thing. You know, Cork defence should know that a little bit better, being honest, because, you know, you never really see that ball breaking in behind. From Colin Fennelly, it's always breaking down in front.
In fairness, Kilkenny put Pádraic Walsh in on Cadigan. Like, I mean, I don't think he made much improvement on Cadigan. Cadigan was just on fire, but at least they tried to do something, you know, with it.
Yeah, and look, Pádraic Walsh, in fairness, again, testament to the man, he has played practically everywhere for Kilkenny now since he's come in there. Wherever they see a fire, they put him in to put it out. But Cadigan was untouchable for long periods that game. And yet he had a massive wide when Cork were on their big comeback.
Yeah. And Harnady
too. It was a routine score.
Harnady had been terrible.
Score. You know, especially the form he was in. He'd scored four. I think he'd won four frees. You'd expect him to put this over. And it was a big, as you said, look, Harnady too. And it was in the melting pot at that stage because Cork were really on that comeback. Look, from that genius of a goal from Patrick Horgan.
Yeah, that knocked the wind out of their sails, definitely. There's no doubt about it. Isn't it mad that you'd say that Kilkenny won that game without Adrian Mullen flying it, without TJ Reid flying it, with Killian Buckley taken off at half time, with Pádraic Walsh not really in the game, then going back in on Cadigan and getting a hard time? They're kind of their main leaders.
Yeah, they certainly are. And I can only imagine that for the last week or two, all that's been drummed into those Kilkenny players is you're a one-man team. Or, in other words, you know, we're going to show that we're not a one-man team with TJ. You talk about, like, Killian Buckley obviously has struggled in terms of his injury, and he's not got back to form at all.
No, he's not right. Maybe he's not fully
fit. He's not
fit.
Right. Yeah. And look, again, credit to him, he's trying. Richie Hogan was essentially a masterstroke. You know, he got 2 minutes, I think, in that Leinster final. It was a complete roll of the dice from Cody, but it worked. And look, Cody's a devil for that, because John Donnelly barely featured for the last few games either. And in he brings Richie Hogan, John Donnelly out of cold, he gets 1-4 of a return.
Yeah.
You know, how many times have we seen that? Now, look, they're obviously very good hurlers, but, you know, he's not afraid to make those big changes. And he wasn't afraid, obviously, we mentioned their bench, to make changes throughout the game as well. and pull boys off when he sees fit. He's ruthless from that perspective.
Yeah,
but Donnelly, you're right. Yeah. Look, Kilkenny, some of their big hurlers didn't perform. But I wanted to get to this point. TJ, 10 frees. But it's what he does apart from that. You know, I don't care if he's been marked closely and he's not getting many shots off, but his work rate is just, it's a joy to behold. And it is a lesson for everyone out there. You know, for those days that's not working for you, just keep working yourself and do, you know, essentially do what's best for the team. Because the amount of flicks and blocks and dirty ball that he wins and offloads, it's just, it's as I said, it's a joy to behold because he's so selfless.
So selfless.
I just think it's brilliant to watch.
He gets he got fouled a few times yesterday, which when he could have scored, I suppose. But Stephen McDonald deserves a lot of credit because he's marked Austin Gleeson out of it in big matches as well. So like, I mean, he's definitely the man for that job for Cork.
Yeah, I've marked Stephen a couple of times now, and he's tough and he's uncompromising, and you know he'll give it to you tough. And look, I actually enjoyed marking him because it was a right good battle, and you know you could get that manliness from him. And I met him once after that as well, and you know we had a good old chat about it and a good old laugh about it, because you love battles like that. I think that's what we all love sport for, when you can come off the field, don't care about how tough you were or even if there was a stroke or two, once you're manly about it, I think. So Steve McDonald's brilliant from that perspective. And look, again, fair play to him. He had left the panel and looked like he'd almost, his time was done with Cork, and he came back in. And, you know, he's worked his way back to the top of his game again.
Yeah, exactly. So basically, Steve McDonald is messing with you. You could flick him back with the hurl. He won't go down, and you'll just you'll be able to give yourselves each other a few clips, and it's just you're both going to stay on your feet.
Exactly. Aaron, because that's exactly what happened between us.
Aaron Dunphy needs to take note of the lads you can do this on and the lads that you can't do this on. Finally, a word on Cork. Where do they go from here? Do you think Myler will stay on with them? They have a good under-20 team this year. Apparently they had a good under-21 team last year, but most of the good lads off that have been on are, you know, in there already. Fitzgibbon and Coleman and these lads. It's hard to know. Like, I do take it, like you mentioned the soft centre, but it's hard not to say that there was a soft centre yesterday, because teams they got outfought, and like teams that don't have soft centres, like Kilkenny, don't get outfought.
No, that's one thing to pride themselves on. You mentioned Myler. Look, I feel sorry for John because he comes across like a lovely guy. He was involved with Wexford years ago when we used to come up against them, and he's a big hurling man, you know, and involved with Kerry obviously as well, and he seems a real genuine nice guy. But there has been murmurs out of Cork all year of discontentment in the camp, and it's hard to see, you know, it's the end of his 2-year term. It's hard to see if he can be going back there for a third year. I'd be very surprised if we see him back.
Right. There's that fella from Cork that was going to get the Waterford job. O'Sullivan, is it? Is he?
Yeah.
He could be a candidate.
See, look, I don't know, because Cork's such a big county and you just never know what that Cork County Board is going to do either. So it's very hard to predict who could get manager down there. But even you see Tom Kenny go in there in the last couple of weeks, you know, very late in the season to be bringing in a guy, you know, and even Dermot O'Sullivan spoke about that during the week, you know, he obviously knew Tom really well, but didn't know a huge amount of his coaching credentials, and just thought it was a strange decision to be bringing him in at that time of the year. So look, again, it's just hard to know. I just think, look, Cork, they've brilliant hurlers, they've household names, they've good young crop coming through. But, you know, we've said this a couple of times, they need to marry a bit of physicality along with this silky skills that they have. And obviously, essentially, it's a half forward line that a toughness, you know, a bit of mix and match from that perspective. And, you know, same with in the rear guard. But you would have thought they had someone like that in Damien Catalan, but obviously at the same time, that's manager's perspective. They're the ones seeing it every day.
Yeah, exactly. Right, we'll come back with Paddy Power performance of the weekend.
Wake up, rise and shine. Winter's gone and summer's fine. Wake up, wake up, wake up, rise and shine.
So Paddy Power performance of the weekend, the first nomination, and listen, we could probably stop here, is Patrick Horgan. So he scored 310. He got the goal that we already described, where he picked Hugh Lawler's pocket and caught a ball, almost impossible what he did. He scored another goal off his knees, which we haven't even mentioned. He got a penalty, which was outstanding. Actually, incidentally, Brian, these penalties, while the top players struggled with them initially, they're not struggling with them anymore, are they? They're like, I mean, some of the penalties that we're seeing now are out of the very top drawer.
Yeah, lads are getting used to them now, I'll be honest, you're right. And yeah, I are seeing them scored more often than not now. You know, they've got used to that. How far do you have to go back? And that would have been my one of my biggest criticisms, you know, obviously living it as well myself, you know, not knowing how far to go back with the ball. And it was much more daunting and worried about crossing the line. But yeah, you're seeing more of them scored. Like the two of them yesterday, both of them were top corner. They were, both of them were unsavable, you know.
Absolutely unsavable. So, like, I mean, you could say that this was the greatest performance in a big game by any player and not win. Like, I mean, I think it was Seamus Cannellan in the 2015 final. He scored 3-9 out of 3-16 and Galway beat Tipperary that day. Like, there's some people on Twitter saying that Patrick Horgan, it's not a push to say he's Cork's greatest ever player. He's never won an All-Ireland. Like, I mean, I don't know how Patrick Horgan's head will have been after that game. Like, the psychology of playing really, really well and losing, it's a weird one. I always remember, like, the one thing I always remember, if I played well and lost, while it took me, I got over the loss faster because I didn't blame myself. Do you understand what I mean? Like, you know, he knows there's nothing else he could have done. Therefore, a week or two and he'll have forgotten about this game. Whereas if you're a big player in the team and you don't perform for your team, they're the ones that rot you and, you know, it takes you a long time to get over.
Yeah, I fully agree with your honesty there, because that's, if everyone is honest and say that deep down, that is the truth. And we've all been there. Anyone that's played at any sort of a level, it's, look, it's all essentially, I won't say all about yourself, but look, you essentially do hurl for yourself or play football for yourself, and it's your own performance. And maybe in All-Ireland you'll take winning playing bad, or a county final take winning playing bad, but essentially you always are worried about your own performance. But Patrick Horgan, look, the guy lives for hurling. I've never seen anything like it. I met him on a couple of trips, and really intense guy, very shy actually. Not great to mix initially, but this guy is so serious about his hurling. You know, the stories are legendary about his free taking down in his club, you know, Glen Rovers, and being involved very much so with his club. But, you know, it's not by coincidence that this guy is shooting the lights out time after time. And he's brilliant. And I saw the debate yesterday, people trying to say, you know, is he the greatest of all time? These debates will go on forever, because obviously I grew up hearing Chris De Ring was the best hurler of all time. But, you know, like, I never got to see Ring. It was well before my time. But, you know, that's obviously built on stories, you know. So I was saying that I'd be lucky enough to turn around and tell my grandkids that I hurled at a time when I saw the greatest hurlers of any era. And we'll be talking about the likes of Patrick Horgan, Tommy Walsh, JJ Delaney, Henry Shefflin, these guys. They're just a joy to behold. They'll always cause debates in Twitter or in pubs. They're fantastic debates. I think it's what makes the GA so unique. You know, you love it. And I just think we should enjoy Patrick Horgan when we see him. And a guy actually that took a lot of criticism from in Cork as well a few years ago, maybe, you know, again, feeling that he wasn't, you know, he didn't tackle hard enough or didn't win enough of his own ball. Just was kind of a, you know, your quintessential corner forward. But by God, has he put that kind of idea to bed a long, long time ago. He's just, he's on a different planet at the moment. I tweeted myself yesterday.
He's incredible. And like, I didn't realise his popularity until I went to the Munster final last year, Cork and Clare. And maybe it was just a section I was in the stand, but the Cork crowd saw no one, only Hoggy. A boy, Hoggy, was all you'd be hearing. Get out for it, Hoggy. Like, you're talking about Lee Han around and Harnedy. Cadogan wasn't there last year. But, like, there's some top players. Not one of their names were mentioned. It's all about Hoggy. Like, and Hoggy duly performed on that day as well, like, which he's become very consistent in his performances despite the pressure on him.
Yeah, he's so, look, as I said, I think it's his nature too. He's so intense and he lives for hurling, and he's not a guy for social media. He's not a guy to get caught up in any type of media, essentially. He very rarely does an interview. So it's just all hurling, hurling, hurling. I think that's what allows him to reach that performance week in, week out. He's probably the first person in my era since Joe Dean, the way Cork people have taken him. You know, when you used to hear the Cork crowd chanting Dino. I think he's up there with that level of kind of
popularity,
affection,
yeah.
And popularity. Yeah. Yeah. So, look, he's one of the all-time greats, definitely.
Yeah, no, definitely. Alan Cadigan deserves a mention. Look, Patrick Horgan's winning this. We're just going to give a couple more nominations. Like, let's not try and make this into a suspense because we know who's going to win it. Patrick Horgan, the same as David Clifford in the football. It was very, very obvious. Alan Cadigan got 4 from play. He was fouled 4 times. You know, he hit that miss at the end, would have been 5 from play. Really should have gotten that. But like 4 points from play and 4.
Should have scored a goal as well.
And should have scored a goal only for a brilliant save by Owen Murphy. Yep. Yeah, yeah. And that wasn't it, but that was a. He struck that very well, right?
He struck it well. Yeah.
A bad height, maybe, was it?
Bad height, goalie height, because it was goalie's good side as well. He was getting across to it. But at the same time, he hit it a fair shot. Look, you know yourself, you're a forward, I'm a forward, you'd still be disappointed. You'd still feel you should have scored it, but still, Tim, I'll say that was a save.
Yeah, is brilliant. There anybody from Tipperary that we can throw into this? Because, like, I mean, they didn't perform brilliantly on the day. Maybe Shamey Callanan for his goal and, you know...
1-2 for consistency, but I still wouldn't have him in performance of the week.
Yeah, Milani did well on him too, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. Now, in fact, again, Shamey, what he's bringing this year is his work rate. He did win some hard balls and threw out a couple of balls as well. So that's one thing. But Tip certainly have their problems. But you had to laugh at Sheedy. I know we're going off point here for a second, but I had to laugh at Sheedy coming out with that line that Wexford are raging hot favourites for the Oilers.
I was surprised Sheedy went down that road. Like, that's such an obvious old geez Yera kind of, you know, this old fashioned thing. I would have thought he was a bit more modern manager to be playing that old bloody old school psychological game. Like, I mean, that's as old as the hills, that stuff.
Yeah, you just throw your eyes up to heaven about that. And like, he kept these players on the field for so long, he had that big talk. Obviously, he was, you know, putting that match to bed. And
yeah,
does look, essentially, quarterfinals and semifinals and any knockout game, they're for winning. Like, and I know if lads didn't hurl well, and we obviously could debate till the cows come home about their half forward line, the lack of scores there, and John McGrath's form, Bubbles' form, and all these things. It doesn't matter. Form goes out the window. It's an Ireland semi final. If you told, and this is no disrespect for the Wexford, you told Tipperary at the start of this year, Liam Sheedy, you're going to win all your matches in Munster, Barred and Munster final, and you're going to get Laois and Wexford to get back to an All-Ireland final. He'd have taken your hand off.
Yeah.
So everything else goes out the window for semi-final as far as I'm concerned.
I thought Sheedy was very honest in another, like, obviously he's not being honest in making Wexford raging hot favourites, but he says we're where we wanted to be at the start of the year. That's not where he's been dishonest. It's this bit here. We ended up going the back route. Losing the Munster final did take a little bit out of us mentally. It knocked us back a bit, so we're delighted to have gotten over that hurdle today. So it was honest for him to admit that he had taken a bit out of the mentally, and I thought that was evident that potentially that kind of sting was gone out of him, because I was worried about Laois playing Tipperary, considering Tipperary hammered Waterford by whatever, maybe double what they beat Laois by, and they hammered Clare and they hammered Cork. And I was thinking, going, you know, this game yesterday with Laois, I was thinking, geez, that could get very, very messy considering what they've done to other teams. But it didn't.
No, it didn't. And it does show, though, like, how brittle Tipperary are at their core as well. And yet you can't write them off, you know, because like, you listen to the boys last night, Derek McGrath and Jackie Turner last night in Sunday game, they were saying, look, it's still very hard to look beyond Tipperary, you know, no disrespect to Wexford, but I don't know, I made a bold statement a couple of weeks ago with Limerick and Wexford All-Ireland, and I think I'll have to stick to my guns on that one.
Because it was the year after they won the All-Ireland, wasn't it? They were flying it, and it was just that hammering by Galway in the league. And then you're thinking, oh, that was a one-off. They'll definitely recover from this. And they actually didn't recover from it the whole year. Do you know?
And they have, like, but they have their problems as well, because even at the back, they're still not settled. You know, they went with Brendan Marin as more or less as the free man. But, like, James Barry is under pressure. You know, even just the very first score that Laois got yesterday, really bad from James Barry as far as I'm concerned. Brilliant movement by Aaron Dunphy, ball played out into the space, But like James Barry just dropped off or nothing, and let Brendan Maher go to him, when you all know like the best thing to do in that situation is to double team him, because Leash had no support in that situation.
Right.
So I just thought it was not a great, very, very poor start, and it kind of set the tone from a Tipperary perspective. So I think they have their problems at the back as well.
Yeah, and actually Wexford, if we'll keep this for the preview show, but Leash allowing Barry free for the puck out and Barry not using it well, that would be exactly up Davy Fitz's alley. I'd
definitely
say Davy Fitz might be a bit annoyed Leash exposed it for a while.
Hey, but you know, Leash probably gave Tipperary a little bit of a dry run in terms of, you know, dealing with an extra defender, a sweeper, and how to use the ball through the lines. They didn't do it particularly well for long periods of that game, and they didn't deal with Leash's ability to hold on to ball, and I think Wexford will be even better at that. And I was actually at the league game between Wexford and Tipperary down in Wexford Park this year, and Wexford won by a point, I think it was. Nolan McGrath was sent off, had a big bear in the game, but at the same time Tip were really uncomfortable with the way that Wexford set up and the way that they played. And if Wexford were slicker on the day, they had walked through that Tipperary defence for 4 or 5 goals. And they have the potential. They're obviously a much slicker outfit at the moment. They have the potential to do that. So it will be how much will have Liam Sheedy learned from that game.
Yeah, it's an interesting analysis. So I'll just name a couple of more nominations before we give this to Patrick Horgan. So Walter Walsh and Richie Hogan, I'm giving them joint nomination because, as they say in soccer, Brian, they're like two new signings, right, at this stage of the season. Walter's been nearly written off because he has been playing poorly, and Richie's been completely out of the reckoning. And now all of a sudden, and these are two of their main men who have almost been completely out of the reckoning, are now back potentially in good form.
Yeah, and like you look at that start of the second half, 4 of the 6 forwards are all-stars and all-Ireland winners. You know, so they are four household names. You know, when they're at the top of their game, they're fantastic. And add in like Adrian Mullen then as your fifth. Like seriously, he's the hot guy coming on the scene, you know, at 18, 19 years of age. You know, so like that's a very formidable forward line that is very honest, that works extremely hard. But look, obviously Kilkenny's problems tend to be down at the other end at the moment. They've lost that half back line and full back line that they used to have, and that certainly have problems down the other end. But look, they can be like 227 is serious score, and I don't care if Cork had their problems, still to put up 227, it's still serious going.
It could be a Kilkenny tip final either, and we could be back to there's two teams dominating it every year. Do you remember?
I'd say that would be definitely the longest bet. Paddy will have to do that up for you now. I'd say that would be the longest double of the weekend.
Yeah, exactly. Who are we looking at from Leash then, in your point of view? Jack Kelly got official man of the match. He scored 2 points. Lee Clear kept John McGrath to only a point from play, which is a fair achievement.
Yeah, Lee Clear was very tenacious, and John McGrath looked a little bit out of sorts, didn't like it essentially, and Lee Clear just came out after every single ball, attacked it ball headedly, knew obviously there was a sweeper there as well, that he could do that, and worked it really well. He was very good now, to be fair to him, very tenacious, as I said. Jack Kelly got a couple of points, hurled some decent amount of ball. Probably still debating he was man of the match, but you know, look, I think it's the first, I'd like to know, it's the first time in a very, very long time that you've seen the two losing teams actually get man of the match. It's not often you actually see that.
Yeah, true. That's true. I didn't think about that. Conor Fogarty obviously was excellent for Kilkenny as well, and in other circumstances you'd be looking at Conor Fogarty to win it, but obviously it's Patrick Horgan, 3-10, goal off his knees, one of the freakiest goals we've ever seen, with the catch and the incredible finish, and then the penalty to the roof of the net, and then 10 points on top of that as well. Like, I mean, it's just unbelievable. Absolutely unbelievable performance by him. You'd feel terribly sad for Patrick Horgan if he finishes up without an All-Ireland, but I think he might eventually win one. What age is Patrick Horgan? He'd have another 2 or 3 years left, would he?
Yeah, he would. Yeah, I think he's late 20s now at this stage.
So he'd have more than that. And his game isn't all about pace anyways, is it? Like, I mean, it's just about whether he can keep going, or whether his family or his job, you know, kind of pulls on him or whatever. But if his life is revolving around it, I'm sure any relationships he has in his life are revolving around it for him as well, you know?
Yeah, his girlfriend obviously is very understanding. like all good women behind any good man. So,
yeah, I think so.
You do need that harmony in your life too, though.
Oh, absolutely.
Actually, people need to understand that too. You know, I wonder why some guys give it up and all that. Like, there's a whole different side to it. You know, we are amateurs at the same time, and we used to have a really good manager. I may as well name him now. He used to be Ken Hogan, but he was brilliant for making sure that all the women were happy. Staying in with them, because if the women were happy, there was no problem. You know, oh, we're training Sunday. Oh, no problem. Sure, Ken said we're training. So like, he was cute that way. Keep the women happy, and there's no problem with the men then.
Well, that's it. Any intercounty player on the first day, it has to go, is your passion GEA? And if the answer is no, you'll have to just drink up your drink, and you know that'll be it, or else your career could be shortened down.
That's a fact.
Right, listen, we'll leave it that with the relationship advice here. We're giving out all sorts of advice in this show. We'll become relationship experts. Right, that's it. That's all we've time for. We'll be back with a show on Thursday, I'm sure. And then the following Thursday, we will be building up to the All-Ireland semi-finals. We'll talk to you then. Oh yeah, before we go, actually, we're down in Wexford for a live show on Thursday week, but there'll be loads more details. We'll tell you more details about that on this Thursday. So we'll do a show then. Right, we'll talk to you then. Thanks, Brian. We'll talk to you then. Good luck.
The GAA Hour with Colin Parkinson is brought to you by Paddy Power, home of the Money Back Special.
And when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop. And when I got the chance to go, I said I'd stay going. So I opened up.
We were only the small little fish out there, so we are. And we're trying hard to make it through. But it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know. And it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because, like, I'm heartbroken. I let it go, cause I won't see you later, and we're not allowed to talk, you know.